Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Stephen Yale Lair and Alex Balada. They'll be joining me to talk about an important new book called Green Card Stories. This book puts a human face on the controversial issue of immigration with moving and dramatic portraits of 50 recent immigrants, each with either permanent residence or citizenship, who have settled all over the United States. Stephen Yale Lair is one of the co-authors of Green Card Stories. He is a graduate of Cornell Law School, and he also teaches immigration and asylum law. He is of counsel at Miller Mayer in Ithaca, New York, and has practiced immigration law for over 30 years. Alex Balada was born in a small town in Italy between Austria and Yugoslavia, and although an Italian citizen, his first language was Slovenian. In the mid-70s, he met and eventually married an American woman. They arrived in Ithaca, New York in 1979, and he became an American citizen in 1994. And welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Now, the making of Green Card Stories was conceived about 15 years ago. What was prompting you to write it back then?
Well, as an immigration lawyer, you hear fascinating stories, like we'll hear about Alex's own story, and you always want to share those stories. And so over the years, I and other immigration lawyers have said, we ought to put a book together about our most compelling and interesting stories. And then with the immigration debate across the country, decided it could also serve an interesting purpose for other people who don't understand the complex green card stories. Too many times they think, well, why don't you just get a green card? And don't realize how hard or how long it takes to get a green card. So yeah. With those two purposes in mind, we decided to do this book.
Did the idea around it evolve during the years as it became more of an explosive political issue?
It did evolve. You know, first it was just going to be sort of a feel-good narrative. Then we decided to try to show through 50 portraits the diversity of immigration to the United States. Some are high-skilled, some are low-skilled, from all different countries around the world, settling in all different parts of the country. People often think that immigrants just are on the coasts or borders, mm-hmm. but really they're throughout the United States, and so we wanted to show that as well as part of this book.
Uh-huh. Well, you've been an immigration lawyer for over 30 years. What made you go into this particular aspect of law in the first place?
Total by chance. I started out as an international trade lawyer and happened to do immigration law and really liked dealing with people. And it felt good to be able to get them a green card and to have companies sponsor high net worth individuals or people who are fleeing political asylum or people who want to come for love. And so I really just got taken by the human interest behind immigration law and decided to specialize in that.
Uh-huh. I often wonder why people go into particular aspects of law. Now, Alex, tell us about your experience. You came here many, many years ago. What were some of the reasons, and what were you expecting from America when you dreamed of coming here?
Well, for some reason, even though I grew up in a very remote and isolated little town up in underneath the Alps, I always had this dream that eventually I will go someplace in life where things are better for me. Now, obviously, it wasn't an easy thing to do. I was just a little boy up on the mountains with my goats and sheep, and that's kind of all there is there, uh-huh. you know, for the people. But as I was hearing all this little radio, all these stories about America and Russia in conflict at that time, we had a Cuba Missile Crisis.
Oh, yeah.
I was more and more puzzled about what it would be like, you know, to be in a place like United States. And I kept, over the years, even though as a little boy, this dream alive. And eventually, it became reality. As I was then growing up in Italy and I had a job, I seen that economically, I couldn't really achieve very much, you know, myself in a place like that. And I have bigger dreams. Mm. And so what I did as a result of that, I was going every summer during school vacation time, just off school, to Switzerland, where my parents were working there for many, many years of their lives. And I seen it open up a little bit the world for me, uh-huh. if I could say it that way.
Oh, yeah.
And then one thing led to the other, and I said this story before. I met this wonderful, wonderful, fascinating lady, and after we married, we lived briefly in Italy, and the economically and politically, things were not where I wanted to be. My dream was bigger than that. And then when we decided to come here in the States, and it was much, much better than I ever expected.
You came straight to Ithaca, is that true?
That's correct.
You came right to Ithaca?
Yeah, we came to Ithaca, and immediately, I could say almost the very same day as we landed, I landed a job as well.
That's amazing.
It is really an incredible dream. And from basically $80 a month, it was like $140 a week, if I can say specifically now talking about money. And I said, oh my God, I said, I'm wealthy. What am I going to do with all this money now? And it was a wonderful journey.
Was it everything you expected? Did it fit in with your dreams, or was it
indeed
somehow different?
And far more. And to this very day, as every day goes by, I'm more and more grateful that we made such decision. Is the best thing I probably ever have done in my life.
Wow.
And if you have this dream and you cultivate this dream, it eventually, slowly, slowly solidifies and become reality. And that is the case for me.
Oh, that's great. Now, to tell us, Steve, if somebody marries an American, is it still a hard, arduous process to
it's
become an American citizen?
It's probably the easiest way to get a green card because we favor marriage to U.S. citizens. It still takes about a year to go through the process. But compared to other routes, it's much faster and it's much easier. Basically, you just have to show that the marriage is for love and not just to get a green card. But Alex's story also points out other things about the United States, that despite our troubles, we're still the land of opportunity. And if we can get more people like Alex to come to the United States, then we're really helping ourselves and really making the United States as good in the 21st century as we were in the 20th century.
Yeah. How did you locate the people that were included in this book? And were people reluctant to talk about their lives?
It was pretty easy to find people because we all know stories if we're an immigration lawyer. And I also reached out to human rights groups and asylum groups around the country. Mm-hmm. I also, with others, read interesting articles in newspapers or magazines about people. So we put together a spreadsheet of about 200 potential people that we could profile in the book. And from that, we tried to capture as much diversity in those 50 people in terms of where they came from, where they settled, how they got here, what they did after they got here. And then most people were very happy to tell their story. We always made sure that they already had their green card. We didn't want anybody to feel worried that, by talking about their story, somehow they might not get their green card. So everybody has their green card or their U.S. citizenship. Almost everybody came here in 1979 or later so that we could show the impact of recent immigrants as opposed to people who came, say, right after World War II.
I see. Well, I want to ask you both about this because immigrants have been coming to this country since its inception, and it's still a beacon of light in spite of all of its warts and all of its inequalities. Why do you think America still has this beacon of light to people wanting to come here in spite of the troubles and the wars and the politics?
Yeah, it's true. For me, personally, I've seen it as a very big country where you basically can drive 1 week and you can see all kinds of different weathers. And they still speak the same language, and they still use the same currency. Now, for me, that it is absolutely the ultimate place to be in the world, because
it's an entire continent.
It's the entire continent that opens up many, many opportunities, for you. And you can, if you're not happy in one state, you can go to try the other, and the other, and the other, you can go on indefinitely. So if you have a dream and you have a goal, I believe that despite of all the problems that we have here, that we're facing, etc., that there is no better place in the world like it is here. For me personally, I'll travel. I'm gonna say this briefly. In many, many countries in Europe, I've been in some of the communist bloc countries before the communist era ended, sort of, as well as Spain, France, England. I work in Germany. I work in Switzerland. This here is still the land of opportunity.
Wow, that's interesting.
And I'm grateful.
I would echo that, and I also think that here people still have the feeling that they're going to achieve things based on merit. in other countries, you might feel that, oh, well, if I'm wealthy or only if I have connections to the royal family will I be able to succeed. Here, there's still that feeling that if I work hard, I can do better for myself on my own merit rather than having to rely on somebody else or on money to do that. And I think another valuable theme that came out of the book was the value of education. Mm. People often came to the United States either because they wanted a better education for themselves and they could get in their home country, or they wanted a better education for their children than they could get in their home country. And I think that has catapulted a lot of people to want to come to the United States and to do well in the United States.
Yeah, although all of them don't, obviously.
Obviously not.
Yeah, a lot of people end up in ghettos and in hard times. But yes, the American dream lives on, which is remarkable in this day and age that it still does, and it does. Now, let's talk about Arizona's law that came down recently from the Supreme Court. Can you dissect a little bit of it for us?
Sure.
And let us
Back
know
in
what
2010,
it means?
Arizona passed a law to try to control illegal immigration in a variety of ways. And four of the provisions were challenged in federal court and then went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court recently struck down three of the four provisions that would have made it a crime, for example, to try to seek work in Arizona if you're undocumented or if you failed to carry your alien registration papers, et cetera. The one provision that the Supreme Court did leave standing was a provision that allows police to check the immigration status of people that they stop for other legitimate reasons. So if somebody is speeding in Arizona, it's okay when they stop them to find out why they were speeding to also ask them for their immigration papers. But even there, the court cautioned that they have to implement that particular provision without profiling or being discriminatory, because if they do, then that might go back to the Supreme Court and might still be struck down. So overall, the Supreme Court validated the fact that we are a country that has to have one federal immigration law, not 50 conflicting state immigration laws.
Yeah, so it's based on a federal precedent that
correct. It's
all
called
the
It's called the Supremacy Clause, that the U.S. law is the law of the land. Just as Arizona cannot declare war on Mexico by itself, we really need to have Congress to do that, so too immigration, like the power to declare war or the foreign relations power, has to be conducted as one country with one set of laws, not 50 different laws.
Mm-hmm. But you do understand why that provision that did prevail is going to upset a lot of people, though.
Sure.
Because often, you know, a tail light and a brown skin person, they're definitely probably not going to ask you or me.
And the court sort of laid out a roadmap in its opinion, saying that they have to do that carefully, and if they fail to do so, that too will be struck down. So it was a good win for people who opposed the efforts by states to try to control their own immigration policies.
Uh-huh. And so both sides say they won. Do you think either side won?
I think
more
both sides
than the other?
Will spin the decision in their favor. The Obama administration will obviously say we got 3 out of 4 knocked out. And if you're looking at a report card, Arizona got 3 Fs and an incomplete, so that's a pretty bad report card. The other people will say, well, the major provision, the check your papers provision, is still standing. And they'll gloss over the fact that the court cautioned that too might eventually be struck down. So I think people will try to use the Supreme Court's decision in their own favor. And we'll see what happens over time.
Are the laws like this that happen from the Supreme Court, are they followed really closely by a lot of immigrants? Do you pay attention a lot to what's happening politically in this country in regard to foreigners and immigrants?
Yeah, somehow. There is things that personally I feel they are right or wrong. Because after all, once upon a time, I had this lawyer and told me, no, he said, Alessio, he said, it's not so bad, you know, in life. Only 1 in 20 people are bad, because he was practicing criminal law, you know, this guy. So I think that there is people here that they deserve, you know, the chance, because they come from very oppressed places where there is a lot of misery. And they came a long ways to come here, and they mean well. And therefore, they should be giving them a chance to be able to follow and fulfill their goals and their dreams. I think so.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a book called Green Card Stories with attorney Stephen Yale Lair and Alex Balada. I want to ask you this, too. Can you go over really quickly the several ways that people can become American citizens? besides getting married to someone?
Sure. Basically, about 1 million people a year get green cards. And of that, there are four basic ways. One is based on family relationships, whether it's either marriage to a U.S. citizen or you have a parent or a brother or sister who's a U.S. citizen who's willing to sponsor you. And about three quarters of all new green card holders a year get into the United States based on family characteristics. Then about 140,000 people a year come into the United States and get green cards based on employment characteristics. Either they're so good, like Picasso or Einstein, that we just want them, they don't need a job, or more often they have an employer who sponsors them, but the employer has to show that there are no U.S. workers who are willing, able, and available to do that job before they can have the foreign worker get a green card that way.
Uh-huh.
A third way is what I call the diversity visa lottery, and it's a lottery system to try to stimulate more diversity. Over 50% of all immigrants come from just eight countries. And so in 1990, Congress said, let's try to get more diversity from other countries. So 50,000 people a year get green cards based on this diversity lottery. And then about another 40,000 to 60,000 people a year get green cards based on political asylum. They're fleeing persecution in their home country, and we don't want to send them back to their country. And so if they can really prove that they would be persecuted, then we allow them to stay and get a green card that way. Mm-hmm. But all of these ways have limits in terms of numbers or countries, and so the weight can vary. As I mentioned before, if you are married to a U.S. citizen, that takes about a year, and that's about the fastest way. If I have a brother or sister and I'm in the Philippines and my U.S. brother or sister is sponsoring me, I could wait more than 20 years to get a green card.
Wow.
So it's not easy, and that's why it's so hard to get a green card, and people don't realize it. And even after you get a green card, you have to wait another 3 to 5 years before you can apply to become a naturalized U.S. citizen.
That's a long, long process, isn't it? Now, who decides whether somebody has extraordinary talent? How do they decide that?
We have an immigration agency, and we write laws by Congress that says if you are extraordinary, you can get a green card, for example. And then the agency fleshes out that language with guidelines. You know, to be extraordinary, you have to win a Nobel Prize or be mentioned in the New York Times or other characteristics.
You can submit tapes.
You can submit tapes. You can submit recordings. You know, books like Green Card Stories will get you a green card, perhaps. But, you know, you have to prove it to the satisfaction of the immigration agency. And obviously, they have to weigh all the evidence and compare this application to other applications to determine whether you truly deserve to be called extraordinary.
Uh-huh. You know, I heard that you could also become a citizen if you have an extraordinary amount of money and you could start a business here. Is that true?
It's one of the employment-based characteristics. Uh-huh. It's the fifth employment-based category. And if you have $1 million and by investing that $1 million in the United States, thereby create 10 jobs for U.S. workers, you can get a green card that way. But, you know, not everyone has $1 million and not every investment is going to create 10 jobs within a two-year period. So less than 5,000 people a year get green cards based on that investment category.
Mm-hmm. Alex, have you tried to help family members come here through the years? Have you tried to bring other people here?
Yes, indeed. Only one occasion, I have a cousin that has struggled. He's my age. He's actually a year older than I am. And he came after I was a resident here, and I lived here for a period of time, I believe probably about 10 years. He came to visit me, and he is a very hardworking man, and he's a little bit like me. He's after he has big dreams and goals, and he wants to achieve things and do things. He has also a few talents that they are a little unique. He's, he's a craftsman. Mm-hmm. In many ways. And he came to visit. He was really impressed about my achievement, even though I was just kind of starting because, I was about 10 years in the country and so on. We have our first little house, et cetera, and I have a job and a family. And so, but he was so impressed that he really very, very much wanted to see if there's any possibility for him to come in. And so I said to him, Elio, his name was Elio, is Elio. I said, I am going to check. I said, we have a friend in the Congress, Matt McHugh, the congressman at that time. Mm. And I said, we're going to see if there's any possibilities. And as Steve has stated just earlier, it was virtually impossible because the only way that he could come in this country was in a way of employment. Uh-huh. So somebody had to employ him to call him in the country and prove to that there was no American citizen that was competent enough or was willing to do his job, which was actually a simple job. So it was almost impossible. So he kind of gave the dream up.
And we have an example of that in our book. David Day is a craftsman from England who came to the United States on a visit and fell in love with America and really wanted to come here. And he didn't have any particular skills. He wasn't extraordinary, but like Alex, he was very talented at what he did in construction. He actually found an employer in Georgia who was willing to sponsor him, but it took that employer 6 years before David could finally come in with his family and finally land his job. Most employers are not willing to wait that long, but in this particular case, he was. But that shows the problems of our current immigration system and why we need to have immigration reform to solve these kinds of backlogs.
Yeah. Well, what has been the process in regard to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? Have we made extra procedures so people can get asylum here from those countries?
Yes and no. I mean, anyone from any country can get asylum in the United States if they can show they have a well-founded fear of persecution. And obviously, people fleeing from Iraq or Afghanistan can probably show that more easily than if you're fleeing from Canada or England. Mm-hmm. But we also have some special programs. For a while there, we had a special program of about 5,000 people a year who could come in from Iraq if they were translators for the U.S. military.
I was just going to say that,
And I know there are some people in Ithaca who came in that way. But even then, it took a long time because you still had to sort of prove that you were a translator and were vouched for. You didn't have a background problem. I mean, I represented the judge in Iraq who brought Saddam Hussein to trial. And his case, on the one hand, was very slam dunk. Clearly, he would have been shot if he and his family had gone back to Iraq. But it still took over a year for the security clearances to go through to make sure that he hadn't done something bad in his background before they let him in as an asylum applicant.
Let's go back to the fact that we do need immigration reform. Can you state a few things that you think would be helpful in the future if we were able to pursue them through the government?
Well, I think that to have a satisfactory immigration reform, we need to have three legs of a stool. The first leg would be to deal with our borders and have enforcement on our borders so that people only come in legally. Part of that would be having a employer sanctions regime so that people get checked more effectively than they do now. A second leg of the stool would be legalization for the 11.5 million people who are here without papers right now. There's no way that we're going to deport them back to their home countries, and so we need to find a way to let them eventually legalize their status as long as they haven't committed some kind of serious crime. And the third leg of the stool is to how to deal with what I call future flows. People coming into the future, how do we make sure that we do that correctly so that people who should come in can do so without having to wait 6 or 20 years?
Obviously it's a huge problem. I'm from California, and it was always a huge problem in Southern California, people coming over the border from Mexico, and it has not stopped, regardless of the laws that we try to put up. Now, Alex, I want to ask you this, too. You've been here for 35 years or so, over 35 years. Do you think of yourself as an American now, or do you always think of yourself as somebody who's from the little village in Italy?
No, I think myself as American. In fact, I made a comment a while ago when we had this event at the Hangar Theater, and as my record is straight, since I came the first time in the United States to be a resident and to live here, I made exactly 57 trips to Italy to go to visit my mom. And every time I say, when the trip is over, it is nice to come home. So this is home for me.
This is home for you. That's great. Yes. Did you find that with other, Steve, did you find that other people in the book? Did they feel like they really are Americans? Do you know?
It depends on the individuals. I mean, I remember Randolph Seeley, who was a doctor now, an orthopedic surgeon, and he was born overseas but grew up in the housing projects of New York City and always considered himself American. But he found out when he applied for college that he was actually undocumented because he didn't have a social security number.
Wow.
And he was under threat of deportation. He turned himself into an immigration judge who found in his favor, and then eventually he was able to go to medical school. And he said the proudest moment of his life was not getting his medical degree, but getting his U.S. naturalization certificate. So for him, that really made him an American. For other people, you know, they have ties in both countries. Another person in our book is a professor, Murga, at MIT. He's from Spain originally. He's gotten 3 different green cards over 20-some years for different reasons, but he spends about half of his time in Spain and half of his time in the United States. So he's much more of a true global citizen. And while he spends more of his time in the U.S., he still has significant giant ties to Spain.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to somebody who's here illegally? Would you tell them to try to reconcile it somehow or to stay hidden until we do change our immigration laws?
That's a very difficult decision to make for anyone. As an immigration lawyer, I can never advise anyone to break the law. And similarly, if I tell them to come forward and expose themselves by writing an op-ed or something like that, you know, that means that the immigration authorities might take action against them because now they know about them, even if they didn't know about them before. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, they need to live their lives. And this guy named Jose Antonio Vargas just wrote a cover story for Time magazine about coming out, so to speak, as an undocumented person a year ago and what that's meant for him and 800,000 other people like him. And so I think each person needs to make their own individual decision whether they want to take that risk.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about why did you want to become part of this book? Did you just want to share your story, or did you want to help other immigrants? Why did you want to
participate? I think both. Yes. I think first of all is a little ego there, I must say, is to share the story, because I feel that I am I've been very, very fortunate and grateful and appreciative to be able to have this opportunity, a precious gift in life that I could have never any place else in the world achieve. And second of all, to send a message to other people that they are struggling, as Steve pointed out, many millions, to say, hang on, you'll see, keep your dream alive, and eventually things will turn around and you will have what you always wanted to in your life. So it was a little bit of both for me.
So you've gotten everything you've wanted through this country, right? You have a home and a job and
yes,
a family.
Way beyond, I could have never accomplished anything like it. And in fact, if I may just point out briefly this year, every time I go back to Italy, my friends, the way I left them, they are exactly the way I left them. Thus far, and that's it. And not to say bad things, they struggle, they try very hard and stuff. But sometimes I cannot tell them what I have achieved here, that I built this many houses, etc., because they probably will not believe me. So I just settled by saying I'm doing fine.
Yes.
And if you feel
you
like
were
you
able
can
to
come,
progress, right?
Yeah, you can come and you can see me. You'd be my guest.
Well, what do you expect to have happen from this book?
I think this book serves multiple purposes. One is it's just a great coffee table book. The photographer has won awards for photography before and because of this book. The writer is a longtime immigration journalist who was a finalist for a book award because of this book.
Do you want to mention their
names? Sure. Ariana Lindquist is the photographer. Sandra Amrine is the journalist. They've done a fabulous job. So the book on its own, just to view it and to read the compelling stories, is really great read itself. And in addition, it serves a purpose to help educate Americans about the diversity of immigrants and how immigrants still benefit our economy and our culture in many, many ways. It shows also the diversity of where people live in the United States and what they achieve after they get here. And then I think there's also an implicit political purpose to the book, to show that how hard our current system is and why we need to reform our immigration system so we get more good people like Alex who want to come to the United States and achieve their dreams to be able to do so without having to wait forever.
Mm-hmm. Can you give any contact information? Where can people get the book?
Sure. The book is available on our website at www.greencardstories.com. It's also available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and local bookstores around the country.
Well, we have run out of time. I thank you both so much for joining us. Again, the book is called Green Card Stories, and I've been talking to attorney Stephen Yale Lair and Alex Balada. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.